Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Greetings, fellow time travelers. Lovely as always to have you with me for this journey through space and time. This is a series where we look to the past to see what lessons there are to be learned, what kind of points we might navigate by based on the experience of our ancestors in circumstances that are similar to our own, if not exactly the same, all with an endeavour to thinking about how we might live in the present and build a better future. And who knows, we need all the help we can get to proceed towards the future at the moment. To help support the series, which I hope you will, and to get access to exclusive content every week, sign up to my patreon.com site. It's easy. Go to patreon.com, look for me by name, and part with some cash, monthly or annually. It's cheaper if you pay for the whole year in advance. But it's that contribution, that financial support, that makes everything else that we do here on the Neil Oliver channel possible. Okay, that's it. Ready, as we are, to strap into the time machine for the next stop in my love letter to the world. Recorder, microphone, action. The United States of America are locked in a space race with the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, and the Soviets are off the ground first and well ahead. In 1957, Yuri Gagarin was the first man in space. 4 years later, though, in 1961, American President John F. Kennedy declares, "We will put a man on the moon and bring him safely home before the decade is out." The next stage in the race was thereby well and truly set. A human being leaving the home planet and walking elsewhere in the universe for the first time, aiming to achieve perhaps the greatest single moment in the history of the world. Endeavouring to understand history in hopes of illuminating the future, I'm Neil Oliver, and this is my love letter to the world.
Morning, Neil. In the last episode, it was 1963, and we heard one of the greatest speeches of the 20th century. Where are we this week?
Yes, hello Paul, hello fellow time travellers. In last week's episode, the charismatic Baptist minister and civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr. told the world about his dream. This week, we're continuing our journey through time and we're touching down in 1969. We're on the moon, looking back on this beautiful blue marble of a planet as Neil Armstrong becomes the first person to set foot in another part of the universe. Where are we today? We are off world, as we say in Blade Runner. We are on the moon with Neil Armstrong. They're all unique, but this particular love letter to the world, I would say, is made unique by the fact that the substance of the story is simultaneously a unique and unbeatable moment in the story of the world. And it's also fuel, the fuel of the greatest conspiracy theory so far. And I live in a world of being accused of being a conspiracy theorist, championing the right of conspiracy theorists and saying that being a conspiracy theorist is just another way of saying that you were right all along. There is no sharper test of the subject of conspiracy theory than the moon landing. And, you know, there's no getting away from the fact that, you know, many, many people are drawing the conclusion of that they've been lied to forever in so many ways. You know, we're learning the truth, or we're allowed to talk about the truth of the murder of John F. Kennedy, President of the United States, late great. There's so much around 9/11. There's so much about COVID, what it was, if it really happened at all. You know, if in fact what we're really just dealing with was determination to get those medical products into people and see how far they could push it. The climate hoax. So much wildly contentious stuff. And all of it, the consequence, I would say, of the undeniable chronic lying by the establishments of the world to their peoples. They've only got themselves to blame. Apart from anything else, apart from the truth, the fact that people have got so much doubt, well, that's what you get when you lie. They're not trusted about anything. You know, more and more people doubt everything. I'm amongst them. They just doubt everything. If an official, an MP, a leader, a bureaucrat stands up at a podium and says something, my default setting is just to think they're lying. That's just the way it is. And I would say, who could blame us? And when it comes to Man on the Moon, only last night, not for the first time, my eldest son and I were batting it back and forth. Archie's very science-minded, a very clever chap, and we like to argue the toss where he stands up for the validity of the moon landings and I play devil's advocate. So it's right there in real time for me. So anyway, let's deal with the story, the official narrative, as we've learned to say in recent times, whatever you think. And come on, have a bit of fun about you. Don't get po-faced about all this. Commander Neil Armstrong, what a name. The man, the myth, the legend. He set foot on the moon on the 21st of July, 1969. That's the line. It was 2:56 in the morning, as judged by Coordinated Universal Time. Coordinated Universal Time, incidentally, is like the successor to Greenwich Mean Time. It's very much like Greenwich Mean Time, but it's a new acronym. It's used by air traffic control. It's used by the internet. It's the time. It's the baseline time against which all other time is calculated on the planet. At 2:56 on the morning of the 21st of July, 1969, Neil Armstrong set foot on another place. By that time, the mission was Apollo. Before that, there was Mercury. Mercury put rockets into space and so on, or into orbit. But Apollo was the program to, you know, get to the moon. The Apollo lunar module called Eagle had landed. The Eagle has landed. It landed on the moon about 6 hours and 39 minutes before Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. Eagle was the little, it's the oddest looking little bit of kit. It looks like it's been made for a science project, really. Probably because so many science projects have been about making the little models of Eagle, but it does tend to look as if it's made out of tinfoil and paper straws. It's a very flimsy looking little thing. And it doesn't look very aerodynamic. it doesn't look like it should fly at all. Obviously, the massive Saturn V rocket blasted away from planet Earth, and gradually the used up bits of the rocket that were now empty and no longer serving any propelling force just fell away, were disconnected and fell back, until eventually there was just this final module containing the men. And also it had, at that while it was still heading for the moon, the lunar module was part of that entity. And then when they got into orbit with the moon, Eagle came away and landed, and then ultimately, you know, blasted off under its kind of like one time only rocket and reconnected with that module that had remained in orbit, and then they came home. That's so Eagle was like the last little bit that just made the landing. At 2:56 in the morning, coordinated universal time, Commander Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. But by that time, the Apollo lunar module Eagle had been on the moon for 6 hours and 39 minutes. And Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, his fellow, were sat inside it for all of that time, waiting on the go-ahead from mission control that Neil Armstrong should step out. So they had this 6.5 hours sitting together. What's less well known, actually, everyone's got images, not that most of us alive now were alive at the time of the actual event as it was televised, but we've all got sort of images in our head of it all, that very few people would know that before the walk, while they were still inside, Buzz Aldrin took communion with a little packed lunch of bread and wine that had been prepared for him by the pastor of Webster Presbyterian Church in Texas, where Buzz Aldrin was an elder. That's an aspect of that story that fascinates, and I find it moving. You know, there's the quote from John 6:33, "For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world," which is Jesus. And there's a continuity about that, because the Bible story, the nativity story that we all know, or all Christians know, is about Bethlehem. And Bethlehem means the house of bread, etymologically. And Jesus was laid in a manger, which is what's French, manger, to eat. It's a feeding trough for animals. And the symbolism of that is that Jesus would be food for the world, for the soul of the world. He had been delivered unto the world to feed the hunger of the soul. And all of that nativity story, is illuminated by the light of a star in heaven. You know, we all associate that story with something up in space. And then Buzz Aldrin pauses before anything else happens and takes communion in the lunar module Eagle. It's an unexpected touch, I would say. And he was Buzz Aldrin. Everyone's heard of Buzz Aldrin. And, of course, he gave us ultimately Buzz Lightyear in the Toy Story films. He was really Edwin Eugene Aldrin Jr. That was his given name. But apparently his little sister struggled with the word brother when she was little. And she would point at him and say, "That's my buzzer." Because you couldn't say brother. And then, you know, an attenuated version of Buzzer became Buzz, and that's what everybody knew him by. I actually thought his name was Buzz because he had a buzz cut, his hairstyle. But no, it's because of his little sister. And of course, we should always remember, most people can remember Neil Armstrong, man on the moon, and Buzz Aldrin, second man on the moon. Fewer people really, when stopped in the street and asked, would be able to name the third man. The fact is that the command module Columbia, which was that spacecraft that stayed in orbit around the moon, was being piloted all the time by Michael Collins, the third man. I like that as well. You know, the idea of the third man, that's a story, you know, from the love letter to the world as well. You know, that idea that some people in extremis find themselves accompanied by some invisible third man. Well, Buzz and Neil had their own third man in the form of Michael Collins, who was up there, out of sight, circling over their heads. And we've all seen by now, surely, the shadowy black and white footage recorded by a camera fixed, like a GoPro, I suppose, fixed to the outside of Eagle, so that when Armstrong came out of the hatch and climbed down the ladder, he was on camera. And that the pictures were beamed back, and it's call it iconic footage. You know, it looks so shadowy. Sometimes you think it's so shadowy and black because it's been played so often. It almost feels like footage that's been worn out. But the fact is, it was never particularly clear. And then he lingers. He climbs down painfully because the suit is so cumbersome and all the rest of it. They've got massive, you know, Frankenstein's monster boots on, and he comes down to the bottom rung of the ladder. And he's talking into, you know, a microphone in his suit all the time. So almost some of it sounds like he's just sort of talking to himself, really. And he talks about how easy or not he thinks it'll be to climb back up. Who knows? Maybe until that moment he hadn't even thought about it. He'd be so focused on getting onto the moon, he maybe hadn't thought a great deal about how to get back off. In that, not so much the blasting away, but that just the practicalities of climbing back up the ladder and getting back in. And he mentions as well that the big round feet of Eagle have settled just an inch or so into the powdery, talcum powder-like dust that was the moon's surface. There had been speculation in advance that it might be feet deep. You know, I think some people had been concerned that when Eagle landed on the moon, it would just kind of drop into, you know, 10 feet of dust and disappear. But it didn't. There was just this thin inch or two in it, and the Eagle. So he commented on all of that, and the net effect of it is that it's all strangely calm and prosaic given the circumstances. You know, there he is, poised to step down onto a new object in the universe, and he's talking about powdery dust and how he's going to climb back up the ladder. And then of course he steps down onto the moon, and he delivers the line a bit muffled, actually. And the commentators, the USA, the American commentators who were given the live coverage of what he was doing, they quite obviously aren't clear for a moment or two what he's actually just said. And they decide between themselves that he has said something along the lines of, that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And the thinking goes that possibly Armstrong slightly fumbled a line that had either been written for him or that he was planning to say himself, possibly more likely the latter. And he should have said, that's one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. But he might, in the moment, he might have slightly fumbled it. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, which in and of itself doesn't make perfect sense. But anyway, I think we can probably allow for the, you know, allow him to have a slight stumble. And in context, you know, we mentioned in another love letter is the Wright brothers' first powered flight at Kitty Hawk. And it's astonishing to note that when Armstrong stepped down onto the moon, it was just over 65 years, that's all, since that first powered flight. An aircraft like a box kite with a lawnmower engine in it, more or less. And just over 65 years later, there's a man on the moon. No wonder people conspire about whether it actually happened or not. It does seem extraordinary, no matter how you cut it. But there you go. On the face of it, a human being had left the home planet for the very first time and found himself standing on something else in the universe. Now that would qualify as maybe the greatest single moment in the story of the world so far. Many and grand are the stories of human accomplishment, but you'll never be able to quite get ahead of the fact that one man finally stood somewhere else in the universe. It's amazing stuff. Buzz Aldrin joined them after a little while, and they went about doing some fairly anodyne things, collecting moon rock and samples and whatnot. Difficult, though, in their kind of big oven glove gloves. Difficult to do anything. They planted a US flag. Not a world flag, but a US flag. So notionally, I suppose, making the moon American and not belonging to the world. They also had a phone call with President Richard Nixon back in the White House. I've always found that bit very difficult. I mean, you can't make a mobile phone call from a plane to your house at the moment. But those lads were able to have a real-time conversation with the President of the United States by an analogue phone signal. I'll be quite frank, that bit really blows my mind. How on earth? And Nixon, Tricky Dick Nixon, said, "For one priceless moment in the history of man, all people on the earth are truly one." which is magnanimous, allowing the thought, anyone watching, to believe that humankind itself, of all nationalities, of every creed and colour, were briefly manifest in one person, so that Neil Armstrong became our species. A singularity. He is us, we are him. So it's a nice thought. It was a huge turnaround in fortunes in many respects, because since 1955, the USA had been locked in the so-called space race with the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, Russia. And Russia, the USSR, had been ahead in the race from the beginning. They were first out of the blocks, you would say. They put the satellite, the first of its kind, Sputnik 1, that launched on the 4th of October 1957. And then on the 12th of April 1961, Yuri Gagarin became the first human into space, into an orbit of the world for a while. And then to collect the set, to complete the trilogy, the triple, on the 16th of June 1963, it was a Russian woman who was the first woman in space, Valentina Tereshkova. So, you know, they were well ahead. They had put the first satellite up, first man, first woman. So America was trailing and knew it. So 2 years before the first Russian woman, JFK had said that the USA would put a man on the moon and bring him safely home. That's an important second part of the sentence. Not just get him there, but get him back. Before this decade is out, said John F. Kennedy. Some of the figures are astonishing. Between 1960 and 1973, America blew $28 billion on the space program, which, I mean, the calculations are a bit iffy, but you might say $283 billion in today's money. But it's hard to, how do you actually put a value on a dollar then, a dollar now? But that's useful enough. $283 billion in today's money just to get two men to the moon. But all of that money, whether you think it was well spent or not, by 1969 and Apollo 11, the success thereof, the USA had well and truly won the space race. That was it. Done and dusted. But the best bit of the story for me in many ways is an anecdote. It floats about out there. Picture Armstrong still on the bottom rung of that ladder, hasn't yet stepped onto the surface. And he's waiting there. And apparently, what he really said, what was edited out, what Mission Control heard him say was, "Good luck, Mr. Gorsky." Good luck, Mr. Gorsky. What could he possibly mean? And the anecdote in its full form says that Armstrong had previously told friends about something that had happened to him in his childhood, which is to say that he could remember as a little boy being in the back garden of his home playing. And from over the tall wooden fence separating him from the neighbours, he heard the neighbours, a couple, a man and a woman, arguing about something he didn't really understand. suffice it to say, the husband said something and the woman said, "You'll get oral sex from me the day the kid next door walks on the moon." And they were Mr. and Mrs. Gorsky. So draw your own conclusions. Good luck, Mr. Gorsky, which is so perfect in being a puerile anecdote in association with something so momentous and time stopping that surely it happened. You know, you'd have to hope that it happened. I don't think nowadays you can talk about Armstrong, Apollo, Man on the Moon, 1969, without acknowledging the conspiracy theory. You just can't. You know, the fact that so many people are ready to swear on a stack of Bibles that the moon landing never happened, that it was a hoax. I think you have to go there. And what I don't really... I suppose I would say, in these twisted times that we're living in now of perverted truth and upside-down, inside-out world, it amazes me. I love how angry some people still get if you raise the subject of doubt about Apollo 11 and Man on the Moon. You know, some people just have a laugh about it and speculate, but other people get really properly angry and are ready to begin proceedings to have you committed to a lunatic asylum if you say, do you really think they went? At the very least, it's fun. At the very least, it's an entertaining evening's conversation to contemplate all of the consequences that would spin out from the moon landing having been the greatest hoax. And I do wonder, especially now after the past few years, why so many people are so disinclined to entertain the fun of questions about things we've been told in the past. I really do. You know, that there's so many questions now about JFK, about 9/11, about the climate hoax, about everything. Why are people still so disinclined to entertain questions? And it occurred to me just as I was thinking about telling this love letter this morning that, you know, that REM song from 92, Man on the Moon, I've got the LP over there somewhere in my vinyl collection, Automatic for the People. REM. Michael Stipe wrote the lyrics for the song Man on the Moon. And people speculate about what the lyrics mean. It purports to be about Andy Kaufman, who's an American comedian who died young. He died of lung cancer in his 30s. But he had been quite the cause célèbre for a while. He was sort of changing everything. And Jim Carrey starred in a film as Andy Kaufman. And the film was called Man in the Moon. It was a biopic of Andy Kaufman. But in the lyrics of the song, Michael Stipe seems to raise conspiracy theories. Because Andy Kaufman, before he died, had promised that he would fake his own death at some point. And then, of course, when he died, lots of people remembered that he'd said he was going to fake his own death. And to this day, people think that Andy Kaufman is alive and well and living somewhere. And the song also mentions Elvis Presley. Now, obviously, the story was that Elvis Presley hadn't died, and that he'd lived the rest of his life away from the fame and all the hassles that came with it. So Michael Stipe name-checks Andy Kaufman and Elvis, and then he talks about, if you believe, they put a man on the moon. So he's pulling the conspiracy theories together. And, I mean, it's a very interesting song because he also name-checks Moses. Moses went walking with the staff of wood, and Newton got beamed by the apple good. We've talked about Isaac Newton in the love letter. Mr. Charles Darwin had the balls to ask. You know, there's all these names, and then Michael Stipe folds into it this idea of Andy Kaufman, fake death, Elvis Presley, and if you believe they put a man on the moon. So I think that the story of 1969, Apollo 11, Man on the Moon, Neil Armstrong, it undoubtedly now exists in a place for me where I entertain speculation about exactly what happened, not least because it's just fun. And then nowadays, every time I think about Neil Armstrong jumping down onto the moon, I think about good luck, Mr. Gorsky. Strange bedfellows come together. The US military and a gang of Californian acid-dropping tech utopia dreamers. At 10:30 p.m. on the 29th of October 1969, the message LO appeared on a computer screen at Stanford Research Institute in Menlo Park, California. It was shorthand for login and was sent from UCLA 350 miles away by Charlie Klein, the first message sent and received by what became the internet. Next time in my love letter to the world. To help support this podcast and to get access to new content every week, sign up to the Neil Oliver site on patreon.com. I'd love to see you there. I have a new website address, simple for these complicated times, neiloliver.com. Check out my shop for merchandise associated with the series, t-shirts and mugs and hoodies and so on. My Instagram account is called Neil Oliver Love Letter. My YouTube channel is simply called The Neil Oliver Channel, and it features new films every week. And to help build this podcast, tell your friends about it, get them listening, and write a review to convince the online crowd to join us. For further reading about these moments in time, you could try my book. It's called The Story of the World in 100 Moments, and it's published by Transworld. Neil Oliver's Love Letter to the World is produced by Neil Oliver and Paul Ratcliffe for Catnip Inc. Music's composed by Milo McKinnon. Social media and YouTube producer is Oscar CFR. Additional research is by Evie, Lucien, Archie and Teddy. Finance is by Catherine and Trudy. Post-production is by Square Studios and the graphics are by Paul Plowman. Thanks for listening. This has been a Catnip Inc. podcasts production.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.